We have one mission at the program: develop better leaders and create more cohesive teams.
Let's go, man. It's a race.
Welcome to the Program Podcast. The Program is a team building and leadership development company that works with more than 160 collegiate and professional athletic teams and corporations throughout North America annually. And I'm Eric Capitulik, the founder and CEO of it. The Program believes that individual talent affords us the opportunity to do well in life. Individuals and individual talent win games. But great teams compete for championships on whatever our chosen battlefield may be. And great teams are comprised of great teammates and great leaders. Joining me today on the Program Podcast to help us become great teammates and leaders is program teammate Brady Turnage. A retired Navy commander, Brady culminated a 20-year aviation career as the commanding officer of a carrier-based jet squadron, flying the Boeing EA-18 Gulf Growler. He served as a flight instructor, an aircraft carrier strike group senior liaison team lead to U.S. Central Command, and a personnel management expert for 25 different organizations. He has deployed at sea and ashore all over the world, having flown over 100 combat missions over Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq. After retiring, he was a member of the NCAA Division I men's lacrosse coaching staff at the University of Delaware. He focused on team operations, logistics, student athlete development, and mentorship while helping rebuild that program to national prominence. Currently, Brady is a corporate lead instructor at the program, and a high school head lacrosse coach. Brady holds bachelor's degrees in English and economics from Ohio Wesleyan University, where he was a starter on their NCAA Division III national semifinalist lacrosse team. He and his wife live in Anacortes, Washington, with their four children, Olivia, 17, Aiden, 15, Cade, 11, and Lily, 7. Brady, thank you so much for joining me and us today.
Cap, thank you. I'm fired up to be here to talk to you today.
All right. Now, Brady, I want to, for our audience, I want you to know that last summer, Brady and I, we had the, I'll call it an opportunity. Brady may say a nightmare, but to drive, I think it was 8 hours from Seattle, Washington, up across the Canadian border to a corporate event in British Columbia. And there are a couple of stories that came out of that drive that I'm going to ask you about later. But let me just start with, what does effective communication mean to you?
Cap, in a word, I would say effective communication to me means everything. And let me go into a little more detail. You can be, I can be, anyone can be the best technical expert in their field, the best basketball player, the best mother, father, brother, sister. But if we can't communicate effectively, all of that is for naught. We must be able to interact with one another. And by interact, I mean transmit and receive, right? And I emphasize receive or listen or observe as we communicate. If we cannot do those things effectively, then we really don't have a family, a team, an organization, a culture.
Yeah. And how often do we hear, and being a high school lacrosse coach, right? But then even working with all the athletic teams with whom we work, let alone all the corporate teams, how often do we hear, well, you know, that person, they're just kind of quiet. They don't say very much. They lead by example, right? And we're always like, false, wrong. You're lying to that young person or coworker, right? Because when we talk about leading by example, we're usually talking about somebody who works extremely hard and is a great human being, but they just simply don't or will not communicate. And if you can't do those two things, your effectiveness will be limited on any team of which you're a part, right?
That's exactly right, Cap. I totally agree. Leading by example is a phrase we don't like at the program. Now, it's not a bad thing. Leading by example is good. However, it is such a small piece of your role as either a great teammate or a great leader. We have to go well beyond it, right? And what we see a lot of times with athletes or anyone on any team who leads by example is they're comfortable performing and working at a high level. They're not comfortable getting other teammates to do the same, right? They're not comfortable holding one another accountable. They're quiet. They don't communicate as effectively as they should. I see it on my lacrosse team. You know, another thing I see on my high school lacrosse team, Cap, is my failure in communicating. And I can give you plenty of examples. One I'll give you is we'll call a timeout or it's in between quarters, right? And I've got 2 minutes to talk to the guys about whatever we need to do. I'll go through a complete game situation, right? All right, hey guys, we have 2.5 minutes left in the first quarter. The score is this. It's our ball. It's going to be placed right here. Here's who I want on the field. Here's what we need to do. I'll go through it in great detail. We'll break the huddle. And I'll have at least one or two kids look at me and go, "Coach, is it our ball?" Almost like we didn't have a timeout or a conversation, right? And where I've initially, I was like, "How can you guys not concept of this?" And what I realized, Cap, is that's my fault, right? I'm not giving them a back brief, or I'm not giving them the information as clearly as they need to hear it. So they get out of the huddle, they're all amped up because it's a game, and they just have no idea what's going on in the game right now.
Brady, your story is hilarious, and it gives me hope because I've had athletes ask me that same question coming out of timeouts. Now, you mentioned a back brief. You failed to conduct a back brief with your athletes. Explain what one is, and then other effective communication techniques that you employ and that you and we teach.
Sure. We, the program, have eight communication techniques that we teach as basically our pillars of communicating effectively. A back brief is one of those. A back brief simply is your team or members of your team read back or say back important details to you that you just briefed, tasked, spoke. So, for instance, in a huddle, if I say, "Hey guys, here's, you know, it's our ball. It's going to be placed in this spot on the field. We have, you know, 2.5 minutes to go. I want to run out of this particular set. I'd like Cole to initiate. Before I let them go, I'll say, "All right, guys, how much time we have on the clock?" They'd repeat it back to me. "Okay, Joe, who's starting with the ball?" Joe should say, "Cole's going to start with the ball in the upper left corner." If he says something different, it gives me an opportunity to say, no, remember, we want Cole starting here. It gives me an opportunity to correct that and make sure that not only Joe, but everyone else understands who's starting with the ball. Mm-hmm.
Other effective communication techniques. You mentioned back brief being one of them. What talk to some others that you feel are mission critical for our success.
Sure. As I looked through these last night, they're all mission critical, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why you and Mac wrote about them in the book and why we teach them every day. I would say the back brief is absolutely critical. Listening to understand is probably at the top of the list. As we talked about a few minutes ago, oftentimes in communication, I'm great at transmitting, right? I'm great at speaking, but I don't listen well because I'm the boss, I'm a leader, I have more experience, I like hearing myself speak. You fill in the reason. but I don't listen well. So listening to understand rather than to respond is absolutely critical. And most of us have some gaps in that skill.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved one of our teammates when discussing the difference between listening to understand and listening to respond. Their example was listening to understand. Picture your first date with your significant other, right? And if for me and my wife, my first date with her decades ago, you know, I want to suck the air out of the room by personality, but I know I'm just smart enough to know that I shouldn't. I should ask good questions, nod my head, get good eye contact with the person, laugh when it's appropriate to laugh. That's listening to understand. Listening to respond, think of your last argument with that same significant other. Chances are that was listening to respond. And I think many, if not all of us, can relate to that analogy.
Absolutely. And if I'm not mistaken, Cap, that is an analogy that you've used time and again. And I think it's a brilliant one. It illustrates listening to understand versus listening to respond so well.
Yeah. Well, I stole it from a different teammate. So, but I do use it all the time.
Cap, I have an example of listening to understand and not to respond that is specific to aviation, but applies across the board. Mm. Before I go into that, I think with all of these techniques, as I apply them and as I teach them, I always think about, man, do I do this with my family, especially with my younger children? Mm-hmm. If I can use these techniques effectively with my younger children, mm-hmm. I know I've got a real handle on them. And if I'm not, I know that I need to put in some work on these techniques. And there have been times as a parent where I use these techniques very poorly or not at all with my kids. And again, it's not their fault. It's not the fact that they're acting like a knucklehead. It's my fault that I was not patient enough. I did not listen well enough. I did not see things from their perspective, and I didn't mm-hmm. communicate clearly. So if you can mm-hmm. use these with young people, I think you can use them in any scenario.
Yeah. I mean, Brady, I want to hear about your aviation example of that. But it's why I always say, like, if you want to improve your communication techniques, be a youth coach, because, man, you get lots of chances at it. And yeah. So anyway, what was the aviation example you were discussing?
So I had the great fortune to fly with a Marine Corps aviator, which you'll like, by the name of Scratchy Riggs. Phenomenal aviator, great officer, very, very mission focused, very tactical, and one of the most proficient pilots and aviators I've ever been around. He was a training officer at Top Gun before I met him. I meet him. He's a senior pilot in the Marine Corps squadron in our air wing. And we get down to Fallon, Nevada, which is where the entire air wing, 8 squadrons worth of aviators, does their really big, complex training workup before deployment. Mm-hmm. Day before we start flying, Scratchy, on his own accord, walks up to the front of the big, huge auditorium where about 250 of us are sitting, walks up onto the stage, and has an announcement to make. And he wants to talk about how we as an air wing need to perform during this training exercise. He could have talked about any number of things, Cap. He could have talked about weapons employment, the latest tactics, safety, how important it was to make your takeoff and land times, how we were going to debrief events, formation flying in bad weather. He could have hit dozens of really important things. What he talked about was listening. And he had a very aggressive, almost harsh way of saying it, but it really drove home the point well. And he said, He was talking about Strike Common, which is a radio net that everybody's listening to. So during a big exercise, a big fight, a big mission, that radio frequency is absolutely inundated. You can't get a word in edgewise. So he said, if you think you have something to say on Strike Common, shut the F up. If you absolutely, positively must talk on Strike Common in your life or the life of your wingman depends on it, think, key the mic, speak concisely, release the mic. And the point was, don't talk, listen. Gain situational awareness and listen and build a mental picture of what's going on in the air and on the ground rather than talking. What you have to say is probably not as important as what someone else has to say.
Mm. Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Not surprisingly said by a Marine, but I'll let that go. So we talk about back briefs. We talk about effective community. I'm sorry. We talk about listening to understand. A couple others that you think they're all mission critical, but some that you feel like you're consistently discussing.
Okay, let's focus on CLAP for a minute. CLAP is a mnemonic or an acronym that we use, and it is CLAPPP, right? And it stands for clear, loud, with authority, pauses, posture, and the final P is preparation, which, interestingly, one of our best clients and partners helped us come up with after we had been using CLAP for quite some time.
So yeah, clear, two loud, P's, they added the third P.
That's exactly right. The reason I bring up CLAP is it, to me, is kind of it's almost your gateway technique into how can I communicate more effectively in all scenarios?
Yes.
Because it has several different things, some of them verbal, some of them physical, some of them before I even start communicating, right? Posture and preparation, I would tell you, start before you say that your first word. So it's kind of your gateway catch-all technique that if you can nail CLAP, you're 75% of the way there in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Yeah. That I think if we were to look at CLAP, clear, loud, with authority, pauses, good posture, preparation, the six pieces of CLAP with three P's. Well, I think one that all of us today can make a habit is that final P, prepare, right? We hear so much of, hey, speak from the heart. Well, yes, make sure that your comments are transparent, thoughtful, meaningful for you. But we communicate first by preparing. And sometimes we may not have days to prepare, right? I mean, I'm going to be going down to Dallas here in a couple of days. I'm sorry, down to Austin in a couple of days. I'm going to give a keynote speech to this corporation. I have an hour call with them yesterday to talk about their team so that I can make sure that my remarks are personalized to that team. I'm addressing that team and that industry with their unique strengths and challenges. I can then prepare for that keynote speech. But we don't always have that luxury. Sometimes, I mean, think about it as a coach, right? The other team, you score 14 play drive, score a touchdown, you kick off right before halftime, and the other team runs it back for a touchdown. End of the half, you're walking into the locker room, and coaches come into the locker room and just speak stream of consciousness. They speak from the heart. You know, the challenge of that, right, Brady, is that sometimes it does work. Sometimes. The issue is we forget how often our remarks, they did not work well. And even if they did, it could have worked even better if we had just taken, even if it's just 30 seconds to gather ourselves. Yes, it's best if you can prepare by speaking what you're going to say in the group out loud, actually say it out loud, because how we say things, it sounds different when we say it out loud than when we just think about it in our head. But even without that luxury, if we just took 30 seconds and thought, okay, I'm going to go in and this is the one thing, two things, maybe three, but definitely no more than three things that I want my team to remember. Number one, this. Number two, number three, and then get off the stage. We all have that opportunity and we just don't take it. And I think in many respects, it's because people are very uncomfortable in the silence. Your thoughts?
I agree 100%. I have fallen prey to that. You go in at halftime and you're speaking from the heart, and maybe there's a lot of motivation there, but it's kind of on a tangent, right? It's kind of going down some path that you don't really know because you didn't prepare, to your point. What I have found works for me very well is I turn to my assistant. I have a fantastic assistant coach, and go, hey, what do we need to talk to these guys about at halftime? And I may have 17 seconds with him, but in that 17 seconds, he'll give me a nugget or two, or tell me, oh, coach, I don't know if you want to talk about that, right? He'll prevent me from talking about something that isn't worth our time. That always works better than if I go in there without asking him or without talking to him. And that is literally less than a minute of preparation, mm-hmm. right? You know, Kat, one of the things I've seen you do is you mentioned going down to Austin next week to give a keynote. How many times do you think you've given your leadership and attacking adversity keynote?
Yeah, 1,000.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You and I were in Minneapolis last fall where you were going to give that keynote, and you prepared not only prior to the trip, but the morning of, you prepared for several hours for that keynote, reviewing things you had said, done 1,000 times before. That really stuck with me. Preparation is one of the hallmarks of a true professional in any field.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Back briefs, listening to understand, clap. I think, and you're right. I mean, we discuss 8 different techniques in effective communication. But for the interest of this podcast, if I were to press you, okay, you can't talk about all 8, just one more, what would that other one be?
The one more would be 3 important questions.
Okay, we would agree on that then, because, boy, they're all mission critical, but if you press me on one last one, I couldn't talk about the others. Which would it be? I would talk about the golden rule as well. You want to discuss it?
Yes, sir. So yeah. We call it the golden rule of communication, and it's comprised of 3 important questions. Those questions are, number 1, what do I know? Number 2, who else needs to know it? And number 3, have I told them? Right? These are questions that we, not just as leaders, but as teammates, spouses, members in a family, members of an athletic team, leaders in a community organization. These are 3 questions that should be on a constant loop in our mind. And one of the great techniques to help us use this communication technique is write these 3 questions on a note card and put that note card somewhere visible on your desk, right? Lean it up against your computer monitor or something like that. So every time you walk back in and sit down from lunch, from a meeting, from a trip, whatever it is, you're facing that question and you instantly go into that habit. We want to form a habit of, what do I know? Who else needs to know it? And have I told them? And if you act on that, man, you talk about a force multiplier in your organization. It's big time.
Wars could have been avoided if leaders had followed the golden rule of communication with each other, right?
Exactly right.
Brady, we talked a little bit about coaching. You shared a great example, right? Coach, are we on offense? Do we have the ball? Correct me up, Brady, because the other night we had a U-12 lacrosse game. And coming out of, we were man up. The other team had a penalty. And called the timeout, tight game, got the players in, drew up a play. Axel was actually going to start with the ball, my son. Okay, we break the huddle. They blow the whistle. He makes a move, shoots, scores. The other team's head coach looks over and at me and goes, man, you got to show me your man up play. And I looked at him and said, sure, but that wasn't it. I'll show you what I just put down here. That wasn't it though, right? So ultimately, effective communication is key, but make sure you have big, fast, strong athletes too, talented people in your organization, because even with your poor communication, if your people are talented enough, they can still get the job done sometime. We don't want to rely on that though. You mentioned, you gave the example as a commanding officer, as a pilot, of effective communication. How about in all your work with the program clients? I mean, you are client facing much more than I am, and working with our clients much more than I am. If you were to, with all that work, are there things that you really stress, that you find yourself stressing to clients again and again? And look, if it's not just about effective communication, that's fine. You can mention that here. And not only that they have to get better at it, but then ways that you help them get better at it.
That's a great question, Cap. Thanks for asking it. I would say the biggest thing that I stress, and that our teammates stress in those client-facing events, is certainly on the corporate side, is go see your teammates in person, right?
Yeah.
We have tons of ways to communicate today. Email, phone calls, video calls, dozens of social media platforms, SharePoints, portals, you name it. All of those are fantastic tools. They make us more efficient. They speed up business. They're amazing tools. There is no substitute, in my opinion, ever, for real face-to-face, person-to-person, or person-to-team interaction. So take the time, even if you have to get in the car and drive a couple hours, to go see your teammates and go see your teams and look them in the eye face-to-face. So much of our communication is nonverbal, well over half of it. Seeing someone in person in the same room is invaluable.
Yeah. Leadership is a contact sport.
Yes, it is. 100%.
Yeah. And we see, I feel like the one consistent on amongst all teams, even the great ones, is a need, a desire to hold each other accountable more, better. I think a lot of times leaders, and this includes me, I it's something I've worked incredibly hard on. I hope my teammates, I hope you and my teammates at the program see it, but I know I can still get much better at it. I hope this is true for my athletes and my other teammates, my wife, all the teams I'm on. But we talk about accountability, and we always think of it as negative. Not meeting the standard, I'm going to hold you accountable. We too often forget as leaders to look for people meeting and exceeding the standard. Look for it. And making sure that we hold them accountable then too. There should be benefits to accountability, not just consequences. But in either case, whichever the case is, people who are not meeting or people who are meeting and exceeding the standards, it requires us, accountability requires us to be able to effectively communicate. And so often, though, why do you think, starting with young people, somebody can't read or write, a teacher says, I gotta challenge this person to get better reading, writing, arithmetic. Athletes, they can't pass block. Coaches go, I got to make them be a better pass blocker. She can't shoot free throws. Okay, I'm gonna help her shoot free throws better. But as parents, coaches, teachers, and then business leaders, we just give an out to people who are shy, don't talk. Oh, you know, man, they work really hard, but they're just kind of quiet. They don't say anything. We just give them a get out of jail free card on it. Why? Why do we do it? And what would you suggest to parents, coaches, teachers, business leaders to help that young person or not so young person to become a more effective communicator?
So, Cap, this circles back to the beginning of the conversation when we were talking about leading by example and why we at the program don't love it, right? If I'm leading by example, I'm probably not holding my teammates accountable, positively or negatively, right? If we develop relationships with our teammates, our community peers, our people in our church group, the kids we're coaching on our basketball team, our corporate partners, whoever it is, if we develop those relationships and they're built upon trust and openness, we're much more able to communicate effectively in any medium, but certainly in face-to-face, in-person communication. And if we can communicate more effectively, it becomes much easier to hold one another accountable. And it's one of the things that humans do not like to do, right? We don't want to tell someone who we care about or who we're depending upon or who signs our paycheck or whose account we need to stay solvent. We don't want to tell that person, you know what, you're not getting the job done right now. And you're right. Accountability is often connotated negatively, right? But if we can have positive and negative, hey, great job yesterday. It can be super simple, right? With a youth sports team coming off a practice field. Hey, Susie, you did great today. You were hustling. Your attitude was outstanding. You got after it. Thanks. Great job, right? That may be the one positive thing that that kid hears that day. And you provided it to him. And it took you 14 seconds. And if you don't say it, she doesn't hear anything positive that day, right? I'm building that relationship by communicating, and it allows me in the future to hold her accountable both positively and negatively because she knows I care about her rather than I'm just the coach who's yelling at her, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's I've found it to be key. It's not the holding people accountable that people take exception to. It's if that's, if it's always negative, it ultimately it's going to cause a fracture in the relationship. Now, the flip side to that is, though, if that person trusts that you're going to, yes, hold them accountable when they're not meeting the standard, but that you are going to praise them when he or she is meeting the standard or exceeding it, that forms unbreakable relationships, unbreakable bonds. And it still surprises me why so many parents are like, oh my God, I can't believe my son or daughter loves that coach. God, they're so harsh. You know, they're loud, they're intimidating, all this other stuff. Your son or daughter loves that coach because they know that that coach is being honest with them, both when they aren't, but also when they are meeting the standard. And that's true for young people in school and in sports. That's true for Marines and sailors, airmen, soldiers in the military. And it's most definitely true with all the corporate teams we're privileged to work.
Absolutely. It applies these techniques, these ideas, accountability applies to any group of humans who are congregating in a group in any form, anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. One piece I'd share with the audience, and then we're going to talk about our trip to British Columbia. I came out, speaking of leadership as a contact sport, I came out to an event that you and our teammate Jamie Slife were leading in Illinois, and you were facilitating a conversation late at night with one of our corporate clients. They had done a day of our experiential training where that shared adversity with us helps build trust and openness and transparency. And we're having a conversation. I thought it was a great conversation. And the group was talking, communicating with each other, as were you and Jamie with them. And then afterwards, I had said to you, I don't know if you remember this or not, I had said, hey, I think you can tell really easily the level of trust and that you formed with these people in this organization and the relationship that you've built with them. I think, though, that you're talking too much, that you, every comment by one of our clients here, it doesn't require a comment from us as the facilitators of that conversation. And I gave that to you for feedback. And then I had to self-reflect on my own communication, because I find myself facilitating many conversations, even if it's just internally with our program team. And you mentioned listening to understand earlier. And I think it's a bit that, but then I also feel like it's a bit of just there's talking and there's communicating. And at the program, we don't try to change the way people talk. We all talk differently based on, boy, a host of different factors, our life experiences from when we're little babies to adults, right? But we do teach effective communication and how to effectively communicate. And a big part of that is brevity and the importance of brevity. Communicate too much, people start to tune you out. How do you, though, judge now your brevity?
Great
Based
question.
On that conversation we had with that company, you know, I think that was last summer or something.
It was last summer. It's a great question. You were spot on with your feedback to Jamie and to me, right? And that goes to accountability, which we just talked about.
Yeah.
It goes to us listening, and you're 100% right. In those conversations that we are facilitating, keyword facilitate, if we're doing our jobs correctly, we're not speaking a whole lot. If we're talking a lot, we are ineffective. We have not gained the trust of that group, and we have not facilitated a conversation. We're basically just standing at the microphone talking. Mm. All right. So how do you judge it? In those interactions and in any other interaction, I think the more experience you have, the better you are at this, right? The more you communicate, not talk, but the more you communicate, the better you get. The more uncomfortable we get and make ourselves communicate, especially when we don't want to, the better we get at this. And a lot of it's reading body language, mannerisms, eye contact. Again, and that gets difficult over, think about email, right? A written form of communication that we send back and forth in volumes, right? That gets very difficult to read intent in between the words, to read how someone's feeling. So how do I judge brevity? Knowing the environment, knowing the organization, developing the relationship, because in some cases, brevity may be rude, right? It may be customary with a certain group of people or in a certain company that we sit down and we have 20 minutes of conversation before we ask one another serious questions. In another organization, that may be a waste of 20 minutes of time, right? So I've got to develop those relationships. I've got to do my research. This goes to preparation and clap. Have I prepared well enough? And I've got to feel out that interaction, that room, that organization to gauge how brief I need to be. I also need to be thinking about, and when I say I mean all of us, I also need to be thinking about what impact do I want to have, right? Do I want to say something for effect right now? And this goes to, especially if I raise my volume or my tone, or I become more intense in my delivery, am I doing it because I'm emotional, I'm mad, I'm excited, whatever, or am I doing it for impact, for intent? One of the best pieces of advice I ever got from a guy who was a couple of years senior to me in the Navy was, never ever have a disciplinary interaction with a sailor and raise your voice unless it's premeditated before you walk in the room and you're doing it to have an impact. Mm-hmm. And I think brevity is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I should have some idea of how brief I want to be or how much time I want to spend in any one interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I have to use my previous interactions with that person. For instance, you mentioned Jamie Slife, right? We all know that if you call Jamie to ask him what time his flight lands for an event, he's going to answer your question, but you're going to spend 40 minutes talking to Jamie about Lord knows what. And it's always an amazing conversation. He is a phenomenal teammate. I love Jamie Slife, but you're going to be on the phone for a while with him because he just loves to connect with you, right? So when I call Jamie, I carve out time because I know that's how the interaction is going to go. And there's value there, right?
Yeah. Yes. Great point. All right. So Brady, I land in Seattle, Washington. Brady drives. Goodness of his heart, drives down from Anacortes over an hour to pick me up from the airport. We then turn around and drive 8 hours up into British Columbia for a corporate event. for our listeners, one of the single worst examples I've ever seen of listening to understand was from Brady Turnage as we drove across the Canadian-American border. Yeah, that's right. You can start laughing, Turnage. When he and I are sitting in the line of cars in some, I mean, podunk small little town crossing the border. And he and I are sitting in the line of cars, which is really a line of two. And we've got to think, all right, are we going to be honorable men here and tell them that we're going into Canada for business reasons? Or do we just say pleasure and move on? Well, he and I decide, no, integrity is always the right answer. We're going to tell them business. So we pull up and the guard says business or pleasure. Without hesitation, Brady, who's driving, says business. As Brady and I were to find out, that is completely the wrong idea. We subsequently spent over an hour at the border crossing trying to get into Canada to conduct a speech and wilderness leadership challenge with a corporation. There's a host of different reasons for why it took us an hour and different rules. So I'm not saying break the law, but by the same token, business or pleasure, pleasure will get you across the border much faster. Now, however, the listening to understand part, the border guard sees that we have wood planks in the back of our truck and asks Brady, where'd you get those wood planks? Because he and I have passed signs for the last 50 miles that say you cannot take lumber across international borders because of some boll weevil or something or other. Brady says, I got them at Home Depot. Guard says, oh, they're pressure treated, right? The guy's trying to get us across the border. Brady says, I'm not so sure. And I go, no, they're pressure treated. He goes, well, what do you mean? He goes, you know, well, you got them at Home Depot, so they treat them for, you know, the boll weevil. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. Is it? I'm basically yelling over from the passenger side, they're pressure treated. Now, ultimately, we get into Canada. And then we have a discussion about your courting of your wife. Now, admittedly, CEO and founder Eric Kapitulik over here had just been speaking to you about the five love languages and how it changed my life and my relationship with my wife. So I do want to come clean on that. But we're talking about brevity and effective communication. And when push came to shove in your relationship with your wife, you wrote her a 7-page letter. Now, it had to have been effective. She's now your wife. At the time, she was your girlfriend. In hindsight, would you still write it to be 7 pages? Would you still write that letter? Would you write it to be 7 pages? And or would you just never tell me about the fact that you wrote your girlfriend at the time, now wife, a 7-page letter to let me just light you up for doing so?
Again, three great questions. Would I still write the letter again? Yes. Would I write the letter as a 7-page letter? Yes, because it worked exceptionally well. And at the mm-hmm. time, written letters were the only form of communication we had. Mm-hmm. To answer your third question, would I tell you about it? Yes. Because, mm-hmm. two reasons. Because yes. It is entertaining to sit and watch you embellish this story mm-hmm. as you tell it every time. It's a little different every single time. I will note that one of our communication techniques is not never let the truth stand in the way of a good story.
That's true. I never let the truth stand in the way of a good story.
My second and final point is, as we talk about brevity, every time you tell this story, Cap, brevity gets further and further in the rearview mirror.
Mm. True. True. I know that. I'm glad you wrote the letter, because I know the impact that your wife and subsequently your family has on you. And it makes you who you are, and who you are is a great teammate and leader, Brady. For all the teams of which you're privileged to be a part. The program and this podcast mission is to develop great teammates and leaders to create world-class teams. Brady, mission accomplished. Thank you for doing so today.
Cap, thank you for having me on the podcast and speaking with me today. And thank you for the kind words. I enjoyed this.
For our audience, our book, The Program, Lessons from Elite Military Units for Creating and Sustaining High-Performance Leaders and Teams, can be found at Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and on the program website, theprogram.org. To sign up to receive our monthly letter on leadership, or to learn more about the program and our leadership development and team building services for your own team, go to theprogram.org. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at theprogram.org, and on LinkedIn at the-program-LLC. Finally, if you have enjoyed today's program podcast, please leave a review of it on whatever platform you have accessed it from. Thank you, and attack.